everybody. Welcome to Grace Church, man. If you're here for the first time or first couple of times, I'm super stoked that you're here. And my name is Josiah. I'm the young adults pastor at our church. And so I'll just throw this out here like I always do. If you are, if you're here and you're between the ages of like 18 to like 30, something, somewhere in there, and you haven't checked out our young adult ministry collective, you absolutely need to do that. It is an absolute blast. There are literally hundreds of people your age, your phase of life, that are here, but you just gotta meet them. On Thursday nights at 7 in this room, we have kind of like our college age nights. So that's like 18 to 24 if you're in that range. That's Thursday nights. But we just launched a brand new ministry for like the post-college young adult. So that like mid, late 20s, whatever that is. So on Tuesday nights at 6 o'clock, you have to pull up. It's the best. And we are going on a retreat. So if you are 22 plus, that's Tuesday nights, and we're about to go on a retreat. It's November 21st through the 23rd. You definitely want to pull up. If you need info, scan the QR code and it'll be right there. We're going to be starting a brand new series of conversations today. But before I talk about that series, I just want to tell a story that I think we'll frame this well. Does this sound good? When I was in college, I went to this event, and at this event, there was probably like, I don't know, like 90 other people there, and we drove about 2 hours away to the middle of nowhere. There was like this wide open field, and at this event, we were playing all these different games and activities, and one of the games that they played at this event that they put on was called the Thunderdome. And the Thunderdome basically had two rules to it. The first thing that you need to know about the Thunderdome is that all of us were wearing different colored tube socks. So I was on the blue team, so I had blue tube socks. And the objective of the game was to steal the other colored tube socks off the feet of the people in the Thunderdome. So like you like tackle them on the ground, take their socks, and the winner of the game was whichever team had acquired the most tube socks while preserving their own color, they were like the winners of the game. So that's the first thing you have to know. But the second thing you have to know is there was really only like one rule to the game. And I feel like this was a very fair rule. Guys could only go for guys and girls could only go for girls. And I feel like that was for pretty obvious reason that was the rule. So the game starts to go 1, 2, 3, Thunderdome. Everyone's attacking each other. You know, it's like Gladiator, you know, and like all that's happening in the middle of this gigantic field. Well, I had come with my one friend named Thomas. Thomas, like the tank engine. And I love Thomas to death. I love hanging with Thomas. He is the best. But I don't know a better way to put it other than like Thomas is a little crazy. You know, I don't know if you have a friend that like, they get confused, but like when they get confused, they're very confident in the thing that they're confused about. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? That was Thomas, you know? And in addition to this, Thomas is like partially blind. And like, here's what I mean. Without his glasses are the highest prescription glasses I have ever seen in my entire life. You know, like they use that as a telescope. You know, if you were to put on Thomas's glasses, if you wore those for 5 minutes, you would need a prescription after that. You know, so Thomas can't see anything without his glasses. So we're playing this Thunderdome game. Everyone's like attacking each other, whatever. And Thomas was out doing Thomas stuff. So he had missed all the rules to the game. He had missed the entire explanation. And so he walks into just this field of people attacking each other. So what does Thomas do? Well, there was a woman there who was kind of short, she was kind of skinny, but she had a shaved head. And mind you, Thomas can't really see. And so what does Thomas do? Thomas tackles this woman to the ground and starts attacking her. And he just starts swinging and swinging. And we look over in the corner of Ryan. I see Ben Redinger, he knows what I'm talking about. We look over in the corner of Ryan, we're like, Thomas, what are you doing, bro? He's like, I will destroy her now, you know? And he's just like attacking her. So we're trying to pry Thomas off of this girl. He's still swinging. He's still, you know? And we look, we're like, Thomas, that's a girl, dude. And he goes, okay, and he attacks someone else instead. Here's why I tell you that story. When you don't understand the battle that you're in, you're not gonna know how to fight it. When you don't understand the battle that you're in, you're not gonna know how to fight it. I wanna give a statement that is fundamentally true this morning. And whether you are 5 years old or 95 years old, no matter what phase of maturity or life you're in, this is true of all people of all time in every season of life. Here's a statement. Every single one of us has a battle that happens inside of our minds every day. Every single one of us has a battle that is happening inside of our minds every single day. Many of us, I don't know what your battle is, but I know that many of us wake up every morning anxious, uncomfortable in our own skin, constantly tense, constantly worried about what's gonna happen. Many of us, our lives are like plagued with insecurity. So every time you look in the mirror, you know, or every time you go to work, you feel like you're not keeping up, or, and these insecurities have kept you from making really healthy decisions that you know you need to make, but you can't quite bring yourself there. Many of us, this is me, just have the hardest time relaxing. I feel like every time I go home and I finally can escape like the chaos of you know, everything going on, and I sit down on this comfy chair that I have, as soon as like, take a deep breath, all these thoughts start flooding in. And I'm immediately thinking about everything that's going on in work, everything that I haven't fixed at the house, whatever like the most broken relationship in my life is, that's it, that person, you know what I mean? That's what's going on. Many of us are full of negative thinking. So you're cynical, you're pessimistic, you're skeptical, and you try and like say, like I'm being realistic, but you're cynical. And then many of us are fighting depression all the time. And I feel that one very personally. So you have no motivation to get out of bed, and you have no motivation to work hard. And honestly, you have no motivation to like meet people, you know, so you isolate and you try and justify that and all that, because what's the point of trying to improve your life when it's all gonna go to crap anyways? And then many of us have legitimate trauma, legitimate pain, legitimate abuse that has happened maybe way in our past, but it's affecting us all the time. And actually most of the time it's affecting us, it's in a subconscious way that we're not even picking up. I don't know what it is for you, but all of us have a battle that's happening inside of our minds. And what's wild about the whole thing is like, we know it's just in our heads. Like you know, if you just like made that decision or you just put yourself out there, whatever, your life would improve drastically. But there's something internal that's like blocking you from being able to do that thing. Now, here's why this is so important. There's this pastor named Craig Groeschel. He gives this incredible quote. I find it really helpful. He says, your life is always moving in the direction of your strongest thoughts. Your life is always moving in the direction of your strongest thoughts. Whatever the thing you spend the most time thinking about. And by the way, sometimes the things we say we care the most about and then the thing that actually occupies our mind the most are two different things. He's saying, this is the one that matters. Whatever is in your head the most, that will determine the direction and the quality of your life. If you don't think you're a very valuable person, you're not gonna spend your life on very valuable things. So it becomes doom scrolling, it becomes Netflix, it becomes Fortnite. Well, Fortnite's very valuable. I take that one back. I recant that one. Anyway, but you're not going to live up to what you were created to be. If you have this mentality, honestly, a lot of us have a mentality of like, everyone's out to get us. Everyone's out to get us. And when you have that mentality, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You actually turn people against you. Whatever the thing that's in your mind the most becomes the direction and the quality of your life. Now, here's what's fascinating to me. In our modern scientific culture, we are always talking about the battles that are happening in our minds. Like the term mental health is like the umbrella term for like everything that I'm talking about. And what we'll say in our culture is listen, our mental battles are only a physical problem. They're only a neurological problem. So the things that are happening in our minds, that it's just a hormone imbalance. Or it's just like inherited genetics. Or it's just, you know, it's something physical, unhealthy lifestyle, something like that. And because we see this problem as an exclusively physical problem, we exclusively look for physical solutions. So just think about it. The last time someone talked to you and said, man, I've been feeling down or I've been struggling or whatever, what did you suggest to them? What did you say? Well, have you tried going to the gym? Have you tried this diet instead of that diet? Well, what's your sleep pattern? Like how much sleep are you getting? Maybe you need better relationships because I read a study that if you're with these people, it increases this hormone and then you start feeling this way. Or have you tried medication? You know, and for the record, all of those things are very good things. So don't hear me dissing medication or working out or anything like that. But I think we need to be honest about something. Our physical solutions don't seem to be fixing the problem. Our physical solutions don't seem to be fixing the problem. Did you know that there has never been a culture in the history of the world that is more educated on and more determined about healing mental health struggles than the United States of America. Did you know that? So here's some interesting stats for you. Did you know the U.S. leads the world in antidepressant consumption per capita? We're at the top. We are among the most willing to seek professional help and therapy for emotional distress. So all of our talk about like, man, we need to raise awareness, to go see a counselor. Our culture is the most willing to go see a counselor, to go see a therapist. In 2019, CNBC reported that spending on mental health treatment in the United States had reached $225 billion, an all-time high, but that was before COVID. So all the numbers aren't in, but the estimates are that we would have added another $100 billion to our mental health treatment services. And so I know we can always talk about like, we can always talk about raising awareness, and we can always talk about giving people better access to certain treatments. But here's what I need everybody to see. The United States has some of the best access to mental health care in the world. The United States has some of the best access to mental health care in the world. However, the United States also has some of the worst mental health related outcomes. We have one of the highest suicide rates for a first world country. We have the second highest drug related death rate. 75% of Americans would report that they experienced moderate to high stress levels this past month. 3 out of 4 Americans would have said this month, I feel very stressed. Here's the wild one to me though. 42% of the rising generation, so this is all the young adults, high school, basically if you're like under the age of, 29 right now, so 29 or under, if they're 42% of the rising generation has received a mental health diagnosis, and check this, almost 40% of that generation has received treatment for that diagnosis. So everybody has access to these things, yet our stats continue to get worse and worse and worse and worse year over year. So everybody hear me. I am not speaking against medication or therapy or going to the gym. I think all those things are extremely helpful. But here's what I'm getting at. Physical solutions can only fix physical problems. Physical solutions can only fix physical problems. So what if there's more to our mental battle problem than just what's physical? Because it really seems like we're missing something. So our culture, Western culture, is the first culture ever. So however long humanity's been, you know, rocking and rolling, we are the first culture ever to fully embrace what's called a materialistic worldview. And here's what that means. In the name of science, we deeply believe that if something isn't physical and if something can't be measured, it's essentially not real. So here's my absurd proposition. What if there's a reality that we've closed our minds to? What if that's actually like a closed-minded outlook? What if there is a world that is beyond the physical world, a metaphysical world? If you got a Bible or a phone, or I'm actually gonna have it on the screen here, I wanna look at what the Apostle Paul says in the Bible in Ephesians chapter 6. This is kind of where I'm gonna camp out. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, Paul says this, for our struggle or our battle is not actually against flesh and blood, the physical. Instead of being against the physical, it's against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world. And here's the key phrase. It's actually against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Our battle is not just a flesh and blood physical battle. It actually has another component to it, a maybe more important component, actually a more important component. It's actually against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Here's what Paul is saying. There's a spiritual world that's fighting for your mind. There's a spiritual world that's fighting for your mind. And by when I say the word spiritual, I know that like feels trippy and new agey, you know what I mean? Like that one professor in Harry Potter with the big glasses, you know what I'm talking about? Anyways, here's what I mean by spiritual. All I mean by spiritual is that which is beyond or outside of the physical. The metaphysical. In the mind of Paul and all the other authors of the Bible, including Jesus, there is another dimension of reality that exists on top of the one we're in. So I'm not talking about like way out there in the heavens, there's like other things. I'm like talking on top of what we're experiencing in this room right now. There's another dimension of reality that we don't know how to measure and we don't always know how to sense. Now, let me clarify something. This is important. I am pro-science. very pro-science. I do not think religion and science are at odds. I find that they inform each other. But I do think a lot of modern people have come to believe that if something can't be measured or detected via the scientific method, it automatically doesn't exist, which is an ironic claim because that claim fundamentally is an anti-scientific claim. Paul is trying to say that the spiritual world, by definition, would not be able to be detected by our scientific method. Because our scientific method can only measure what's physical. It would be like trying to find plastic with a metal detector. He's talking about something else. Now, I know it's hard for us to get our minds wrapped around because everything that we prioritize and everything that we interact with is like, it's physical, it's tangible. We can feel it, we can sense it. Except one thing. There is one thing that we all know is real. No one debates it, no one contests it, but is absolutely not physical, is immaterial. And no matter what your worldview is, if you believe in God, if you're atheist, whatever, we all interact with this thing every day. No one doubts that it's real, but it's not physical. It's completely immaterial. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? You're using it right now. Ideas, thoughts. Right? We all know that ideas are completely real yet completely immaterial. Therefore, they are a metaphysical reality. So wouldn't it make sense that the overlap between the physical world and the spiritual world would largely take place in our minds? And if your life is always moving in the direction of your strongest thoughts, wouldn't it make sense that the primary battleground for the spiritual world would be inside of your mind? Now, the authors of the Bible have been saying this for thousands of years, and what Jesus says is absolutely fascinating. Jesus says, listen, there is a power. There is a consciousness, there is an intelligence that is actively trying to control your life, but by corrupting what's in your head. And this being is actually the first spiritual being that we are told about other than God in the very beginning of the Bible. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? The devil. The devil. For the next few weeks, we're gonna be in a series on the devil. It's called The Enemy's Playbook. And what we're gonna be doing is we're gonna be looking about how does the devil corrupt our thoughts? What is his playbook? What is his strategy? Now, I know I lost a bunch of you right there. Can we talk about the devil for a second? Is that chill? Can we talk about this for a second? I know. If I'm being, can I be honest with you? Can I be honest? When I first like really started following Jesus, trying to understand the Bible and like really like studying things, there was nothing in the Bible that I thought was more far-fetched and more like, this has gotta be a metaphor, right? Than the devil. You know, I remember being in Bible school being like, I don't think I'm allowed to like ask about this. You know what I mean? But every intelligent person in this room is like, Josiah, you don't believe in a literal Satan, do you? Like that's actually what you believe. And here's the deal. Yes, I do. But I have come like full circle. I'm very skeptical to like, I don't even know how to make sense of the world without this reality. But here's why. As far-fetched as that idea sounds, I've come to realize two things about the devil. Number one, Jesus talked about the devil all the time. So if you're in this room and you're like, I subscribe to the teachings of Jesus, which is a popular phrase to say, I subscribe to the teachings of Jesus. Well, Jesus taught about the devil a lot. So you have to look at what he said. But here's the second thing, and this is probably the most helpful thing. When I pictured the devil, I definitely was not imagining what Jesus himself described. We tend to imagine the devil like this. Can you hit that slide for me? Yeah. So this is our perception of the devil. So there's Will Ferrell, you know, playing rock and roll, you know, and there's South Park right there. There's Kronk, you know what I mean? When we imagine the devil, we're like, so he's got a pitchfork and he's got pointy ears and he'll jump out and bite you like Pennywise the clown or like in the more like extreme, you know, it's like The Exorcist. So like the big role of the devil is he like wants to possess you simply to get you to run around like walls and ceilings. Like that's his big goal for you. Or, you know, he lives in Bowser's castle surrounded by lava in the center of the earth, of course, you know. And I don't know if you guys knew this. But actually on Friday, it was Satan's birthday. October 31st is actually Satan's birthday. That's why the kids were knocking on your house. Anyways, if this is what you think of when you think of the devil, of course, it's going to feel completely outlandish. And I think many sincere people have taken this depiction, which, by the way, comes way more from like Dante's Inferno and like Greek mythology than it actually comes from anything in the Bible. A lot of people have taken this depiction and they've come to some, I would say, outlandish conclusions, superstitious conclusions, and I actually think we've made some damage because of this depiction of the Bible. The best definition of the devil I've ever heard came from a pastor named John Mark Comer. By the way, John Mark Comer wrote this book called Live No Lies. If you are interested in this topic, it is the best resource when it comes to the devil. It like totally opened my mind. I'm drawn from his content a lot. But here's what John Mark Comer says. He says, listen, the devil is a real but immaterial intelligence whose end goal is to destroy life by transmitting lies. He's real, but he's immaterial. And his end goal is to destroy life, but not by like stabbing you. His end goal is to transmit lies. I wanna look at how the Bible describes the devil. The Bible actually just gives a bunch of images and a bunch of imagery when it comes to the devil. So the Bible calls the devil the thief, the tempter, the destroyer, the deceiver, a prowling lion looking for someone to devour in their moment of weakness, the great dragon who deceives the whole world, the ancient serpent who leads the whole world astray. The last two images were the ones that like really started making sense to me. Because here's the thing, man. We still cannot explain the worst of human behavior. Like psychologists, counselors, neurologists, we still cannot explain the worst of human behavior. I'm reading a book on World War II right now. I know, bro. Like, I had a kid and then I turned into my dad. I don't know what's happening, but I'm reading this book on World War II. Do you know how popular the Nazi Party was in Germany? Regular people, not bad people, like family people. Do you know how popular the Nazi Party was? It's disturbing. We really love to say that like the reason for the worst of evil is just mental illness, or it's just a lack of education, or it's just childhood wounds, or it's just a polarizing political climate. And those things, I'm sure, are all major contributors, but are those the only explanation? They can't make sense of hundreds of years of slavery. They don't make sense of genocide, human trafficking, generational cycles, school shootings, terrorism? Is that the only explanation that we have? I think that's a very overly simplistic and naive understanding of what's happening all around us. What do all of these descriptions have in common? What's the common denominator through all of these images? These are all descriptions of deception. They're all descriptions of deception. Actually, according to Jesus, the devil is the one who transmits lies. The devil is the one who transmits lies. Look what Jesus says in John chapter 8. The devil was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language. As easy as it is for me to speak in English, that's how easy it is for the devil to lie. For he is a liar, and here's his title. He is the father of lies. I think when a lot of us think of the devil, we think of like Swiper from Dora the Explorer. You guys know what I'm talking about. You've seen Dora the Porqué, you know? So the idea is like, I'm going out through my life, I'm doing my thing, and then at some moment, you know, Swiper, the Satan, comes out of his little like cave, and he's like, I'm gonna tempt you with something. One more beer, you drink it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm gonna push that old lady. No one will see, you know? And we think that the devil's gonna come out, give us these temptations, and we're like, Swiper, no swiping. And he's like, oh man, you know? And he runs back into his little cave. And so here's what's wrong with that. What's right with that is the devil definitely comes out like a prowling lion in our moments of weakness and tries to tempt us. That is 100% true. But here's what's wrong. We think that the devil does this occasionally. Every once in a while, he comes out and tries to tempt us. The other thing that we think is, you know, some of us have this conception that when I feel dark, when I feel sad, when I feel gross, those are the only moments when the devil is lying to me. I'm gonna feel it, I'm gonna sense it. But to quote The Usual Suspects, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he didn't exist. His primary strategy, 90% of the time when he's lying to you, we don't sense it at all. It's just a normal day. Everything feels great. In fact, these might be happy lies. I think of it more like this way. The devil works more like a radio transmitter or like a Wi-Fi router. And here's what I mean by that. A radio transmitter or a Wi-Fi router, they are constantly transmitting a signal. You can't see it, you can't detect it, but your phone picks it up, your car picks it up. And in the same way, the devil is constantly broadcasting lies, things that are not true. Not always gloomy lies, not always like do this evil thing kind of like, just unreality things. He's constantly broadcasting it and our minds pick it up. Here's a question for you. What if the seemingly random thoughts in your head are actually strategically placed? What if the thoughts that keeps popping into your mind, good or bad, whatever, is not random, it's placed there to lead you down a very specific path. Let me give you a list of examples. Why does it feel like your anxiety has a mind of its own? Like it's planted there very specifically to prevent you from making some of the most important decisions you'll ever make in your life. Why is it that as soon as you experience anything positive or anything sincere, you immediately start picking it apart and criticizing it? Some of you are doing that right now. You're just picking everything apart, everything. If something could be 90% good, but you're gonna talk to your friends about the 10% that's bad. Why is it that right before you work the courage up to do something good, your mind is flooded with insecurity? How come right before you work the courage up to like go deeper into your relationship with God or get closer to God, you're immediately distracted? Like I hate my phone. I'm never more tempted to look at my phone and play Monopoly Go than when I'm like supposed to like read the Bible or something like that. Why is that? Why is it that as soon as you get home and you should be present with your family, you can't stop thinking about everything that's happening outside of the home? Why is it that as soon as you go to forgive someone, your brain immediately starts replaying what they did to you and why they should actually be the one that apologizes to you? And I'm not gonna apologize to the person that caused this problem. Why does that immediately come? What about the alcohol issue? Why is that always the go-to thought? Why is it that trauma continues to haunt you and affect you even though that situation is well over with? Here's a big one. Where does the thought to harm yourself or to kill yourself even come from? Everything we know about evolutionary biology tells us that our bodies are hardwired to protect ourselves, not harm ourselves. So where does that thought even come from? And how come, as soon as I tell you that Jesus loves you, that Jesus wants you, you either think, I know that already, or you go to, yeah, he might love everybody else in this room, but he doesn't love me. It seems to me that these lies are not random, they're strategic. The devil's weapon of choice isn't a pitchfork, it's a lie. The perpetual broadcasting of the same thought over and over to get you to go down a certain path. And he doesn't care if you're a good person, all he cares is that you are away from God. Now, let me ask you a really, really important question, because I think this is important to define. What is a lie? Like, can we have a definition for a lie? Well, a lie is the opposite of truth, right? The best definition for truth that I have ever heard is that which corresponds to reality. Stephen Hyatt, what's up? I learned that from you. And so if a lie is the opposite of truth, then a lie is an unreality, right? Here's a definition for you. Lies are your thoughts, feelings, and assumptions that do not match reality. Your thoughts, feelings, assumptions that do not match reality. When my brother Gabe was 7 years old, we would do this thing where we'd be like, Gabe, you're Superman. And we'd just like gas him up. And so what happened is like Gabe would like punch us and we'd go flying. We're like, oh man, you're so strong. And he'd like shoot lasers out of his eyes. He's like, oh, you burned me. Do you know that Superman has ice breath? What the heck is that? So he would like do his ice breath and we're like, I'm so cold, I guess. Like that's how I'm supposed to react to this. So we just like gas him up. Well, one time we were at our grandpa's house and my grandpa had just built this 7-foot deck. So we're out playing on this deck and we're playing the Superman game. So he punches, we go flying. Oh, you're so strong. Oh man, Gabe, you're Superman, you're Superman. Finally, he had got so confident that he goes, you know what? I am Superman. He goes, Superman, and he jumps head first off of the deck into a thorn bush. And all he hears, ah, 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 ah. You know? Here's the point. My brother believed with all his heart that he was Superman. It felt true to him. It felt right. He was trying to be genuine. He was trying to be authentic to himself, but he was wrong. And because he was wrong, he hurt himself. This is so important. The devil knows that if you believe a lie, no matter how passionately you believe it, no matter how innocent it is, you will self-destruct. If you believe a lie, he doesn't have to do anything to you. You will destroy yourself. This is why M. Scott Peck, the famous psychiatrist, and he's the author of The Road Less Traveled, if you've ever read that book. This is why M. Scott Peck, he defines mental health as an ongoing process of dedication to reality at all costs. Mental health is the ongoing process of I'm dedicating myself to reality at all costs. Because the closer I am to reality and the more anchored I am to reality, the happier I'm gonna be, the healthier I'm gonna be, the more grounded I am. But the more I detach myself from what's real, no matter how I feel about it, the more turmoil my life is going to have. The devil doesn't have to destroy you. He just has to get you to believe something that isn't true, and you will destroy yourself. So what is insecurity at its core? It's a lie. What is pornography at its core? It's a lie. What is cheating? 1 in 5 married couples will cheat on each other at some point in their marriage. What is cheating? It's a lie. Well, she gets me so much better. I would be so much happier if I was with him. If I only knew when I was younger, I wouldn't have. It's a lie. What is anxiety? It's a lie that God's not gonna take care of me. Where does overworking come from? That's a lie. The overworking is the one I struggle with because I don't think God's gonna take care of me. I don't think he's gonna provide for me. So I clock 80 hours of my life into my work, and then the other areas of my life start to get destroyed. And why does it feel like God doesn't like you? It's a lie. Every bit of evil, every bit of sin, from the small to the big, it starts with a lie. In fact, let me take it a step further. Find me any area of you and your life that you are unhappy with, and I will show you a lie that you believe to be true. Any part of me that's unhealthy, any part of me that I'm unsatisfied with, there is a lie underneath that that is driving that unhealthiness. Now, it's funny, I was talking to somebody yesterday. I know this can be an incredibly overwhelming and discouraging conversation. Because here's the natural question, if we're just being honest. What if I have based years and years of my life in lies that don't match reality? You know, it's like, okay, that's a fun story about your brother. You know, he learned his lesson in 5 minutes. I'm 10 years into this, 20 years into this, 30 years into this, 40 years into this. What happens, you know, I tell 18-year-olds when they're graduating from high school, I say, watch this. You ask any older adult what you should do with your life, and 90% of the time, they will tell you exactly what they did with their life. Why? Because they'll never be able to admit to themselves that they made a mistake 30 years ago. And that's taken them down this whole path. What if I have clocked years of my life into lies that don't match reality? A couple years ago, my wife Sarah and I went to a pumpkin patch. I know, we're a very unique and very quirky couple. We went to a pumpkin patch during the fall time. Anyway, so we went to the pumpkin patch, and at the pumpkin patch, they had this corn maze. And this corn maze was very clearly decorated for little children. So you look at the sign, and they're like, it's like a corn boy with a smiley face, and he's holding hands with his pumpkin girl, and you're like, are they in love? Is that gonna work? Anyways, but it's very clearly designed for little kids. And so we look at each other, and we're like, okay, let's do the corn maze. It'll take 5 minutes, whatever. So we enter into the corn maze, and as soon as we get into it, we realize that this maze is way bigger than we expected it to be, way bigger. So we start walking, and we start taking turns, you know? Start walking, hang a left, start walking, hang a right, and 20 minutes goes by. And we're like, is this thing still going? So we keep walking, we keep making more turns, and we're like, where's the pumpkin girl and the corn boy? Where are we right now? And we realize that for the past 20 minutes, 15 of those 20 minutes, we've just been going in a circle. I have no idea where the entrance is, no idea where the exit is. And so I'm starting to how long are we gonna be here? So finally a family passes by, And I look at the dad of the family. I'm like, hey, do you know your way out of here? And he just looks like Tom Hanks in Castaway. He's like, bro, I've been in here for 37 years. Like, we're barely surviving, right? You know that look that dads get of like, I'm concerned, but I don't want to tell my kids about it. You know, he's like, well, we don't even know. We've just been eating the dirt. Luckily, there's a lot of corn here, you know? So he's telling all that. And so I'm like, okay, we're definitely in trouble. So we walk for another 20 minutes and we still don't know our way out. And suddenly, you know, all, deep into this, I start remembering the plot to the hit 80s movie, The Children of the Corn. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is exactly how that happened. Like, this is the plot. So I look at Sarah. I'm like, hey, Sarah, like, if you see, like, demon-possessed third graders at any point, probably should just sacrifice yourself. You know, I got a long life ahead of me. You're gluten-free. You wouldn't have made it anyways. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be fine. Hey, all joking aside, I'm pretty sure we were in this five-minute kids maze for well over an hour. In fact, the only way we were able to get out of this kids maze was eventually we just started going, walking straight through the corn walls, which definitely must have freaked the little kids out when I'm like, hello, you know. We finally get out. It's all fine. Great story. We're adults. It's good. But I remember we were driving home and Sarah asked, what if we were little kids that went into that maze on our own, which it was clearly marketed for? What if little 5-year-old Josiah, 7-year-old Josiah walks into that maze by myself? How would that have gone? How would I have felt? I would have been terrified. For sure. I would have stopped in the middle of the maze and like sat down and started crying, like waiting for someone to rescue me. I wouldn't know what to do. Can I be real? Can I be real? I don't care what phase of life you're in. All of us have felt that way. Life is a maze. There, we know that there's a right path to life. We can all feel it deep down inside that there is a correct way to go about this. But all of us have been fed lies which have caused us to take wrong turn after wrong turn after wrong turn. And now I am living in the ramifications of my wrong turns. And we all know that. I'm living in the ramifications of the lies that I believe to be true. When you were young, this is in high school, you were fed a lie about how sex would improve your relationship with this person. And whatever, like everybody believes it, so you buy into the lie and whatever, you're 16, it's no big deal. Except that lie had ramifications. So now your self-worth for the past however many years, and that relationship led to a series of relationships, and that lie affected your view of God and it still affects you to this day. When you were in college, you know, many of us bought into the lie that everybody believes. Here's the lie, if I just work hard enough, and I just kind of block everything out and I just focus on this degree and then finally I'll get into the job and finally, you know, I'll kind of be financially secure. If I do that, when I'm 35, I will be happy. And now you're 35 and you're not. And you realize that for the past 15 years, you've been operating on the foundation of something that is not true. Can I talk to the men in the room? I know that many of the men in this room, years ago, you made a decision. You were fed a lie. And here's the lie. It's more important to provide for your family than to be with your family. It's more important to provide for your family than to be with your family. And you believe it. Everyone believed it. That's my role. You know, everyone believed it. Okay. But then 18 years goes by. And your relationship with your kids is fundamentally broken. And your relationship with your family is fundamentally broken. That was a wrong turn. But it has very serious ramifications. I don't know what wrong turns you have taken. That mistake was a wrong turn. Blowing up that relationship was a wrong turn, but that was 10 years. Not asking for help when I needed it was a wrong turn. Keeping my secret a struggle was a wrong turn. And then of course, abandoning God, that was the wrong turn. And now all of us are living in the ramifications of those lies. And so you just can't help this feeling of like, it's too late for me. Like if I could backtrack through everything, if I could restart, I would do it all in a heartbeat, but I can't. Like I'm here. I can't go back. I was talking to this woman a couple weeks ago. She was probably in her 60s. And we were talking about Jesus, you know, going back and forth. And she looked at me and she said, Josiah, that's great for you. You're young. I'm in my 60s. I can't reverse the past. I can't walk back the turns that I've made. I've believed too many lies. I know many of us feel this way. Now, everybody listen to me. What I'm about to say next is the most important thing that I'm going to say all day. The title the Bible gives to the devil is the father of lies. By the way, one of his favorite lies is, it's too late for me. Do you know the title Jesus gives himself? If you can get your head and your heart, not here, if you can get your heart wrapped around this title, it will change your life forever. What does Jesus say? The devil is the father of lies, but I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. Look, Jesus is the truth. He's the antidote to every lie that you have ever believed. 1 John says that the Son of God came to destroy, to reverse, to redeem the works of the devil. But Jesus is also the way. He is the way out of the mess that I'm in, no matter how deep it is, no matter how long I've been here. He is the way to something else. And then Jesus is the life. Jesus is the life that you could have never had on your own. Jesus is the life that maybe you never got. Jesus is the redemption of the life that you think you've ruined, and Jesus is a brand new start. I just want everybody to do something. I just want everybody to picture something. Can everybody close your eyes for a second? Everybody just close your eyes. I just want you to imagine something with me first. I just want all of us, I just want you to go back to a moment in your life when you started heading down the wrong path. I just want you to picture it. Everybody close your eyes. I just want you to go back to, when did you start believing certain lies? Maybe it was a mistake you made. Maybe it was a name someone called you and you believed it. Maybe it's an awful childhood memory. Maybe it's a whole season of your life. I don't know. But you got, just picture when you started making wrong turns. Let your mind go there. How did you feel? How did you respond to it? Did you try and like make up for it? You know, work your way out of it? What were the emotions around it? Here's how I felt. I felt like a 5-year-old little kid stuck in the middle of a corn maze. That's how I felt. Alone, afraid, not sure who's gonna come after me. So imagine you are stuck in the middle of the maze that is life. You're stuck there. And maybe you're angry, maybe you're bitter, maybe you've given up, maybe you're crying. I don't know. But just imagine you're right there. And I just want you to picture this with me. Picture as you're sitting there, all of a sudden, a man walks in. And there's something safe about this guy. There's like a warmth to him, you know, that you've never felt before. And you realize that this person walking into the middle of this maze is Jesus. And you realize that this person has clearly been looking for me for a very long time. His kindness in his eyes, his compassion on his face. And imagine that this person, Jesus, just gets down on one knee and looks at you eye to eye. No one else is there. And he looks at you eye to eye and he says, listen, I have come for you. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. And you launch into your story. Jesus, all the mess I've made, here's all the people I've hurt. I messed up, I ruined everything. And he interrupts you. He says, it's okay. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. You don't need to know your way out. You just need to know me. You don't need to know your way. You just need to know me. In fact, I only want you to worry about one thing. Take my hand, hold on to it, and I'll lead you out. When I go left, you go left. When I go right, you go right. You only need to worry about one thing. It's not the past. It's not the future. Just stay with me. Stay close to me. Okay. You can open your eyes. Listen to me. Here's the hope. You don't need to know the way out. You just need to know Jesus. That's it. No one is too far gone. No one has a story that can't be redeemed. Listen, you might have destroyed your life, but on the cross, Jesus was destroyed to give you his life instead. So there's only one thing you need to focus on. Take his hand. Take his hand. Don't worry about the rest. All the time, what I need to do, I need to give up my way. I need to give up my truth and I need to give up my life. So Jesus can be my way, my truth, and my life instead. And he will lead us wherever we need to go. It's not too late for you. So I just want to end this service on a prayer, if that's cool. The band's going to come out and get settled in. Can everybody just close your eyes, bow your heads? And there's two groups of people I would love to pray with. Two groups of people. The first group of people is, I know there are many of us in this room right now, and you are not a follower of Jesus. You don't have a relationship with God. Jesus has not been guiding your life. You haven't been walking with him. If you right now want to invite Jesus into your life for the first time, he met you in the middle of the maze, you're ready to take his hand, you want him to be your way, your truth, your life. What I wanna do is I just wanna give you a prayer to invite Jesus in. And what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna say a phrase and I just want you to repeat it under your breath or repeat it in your heart. These words are not magical words, so you can make them your own. Jesus just cares about where your heart is at. But I wanna lead a prayer for you to invite Jesus into your life. So if that's you, if you wanna begin a relationship with Jesus today, just repeat these words under your breath. Jesus, come into my life. I am done with my own way. I give you my entire life. You died on the cross so I could be close to you. You rose from the dead to give me a life I could never have. You have loved me the whole time. I want to become your child. Amen. And if you prayed that prayer right now, today is the moment where God has entered into your heart. He will lead you. And just listen to him, just stay with him. But today for you is the day of salvation. You've been rescued. Now I want to lead a second prayer. And the second prayer is for a second group of people. And I'm be honest that this second group of people, we might need a little bit of humility to admit that we're here. I know there are many of us in this room who are followers of Jesus or who have been Christians or however you would phrase it. But at some point you began a relationship with God, but you have wandered away. And so there is some area of your life right now where Jesus is not your way. He is not your truth. And if you want right now to invite Jesus into those parts of your life, if you want to follow him, Jesus has never given up on you, but you gave up on him. If you want to invite Jesus back and walk with him, I want to lead you through the same prayer. I'm going to say a phrase. You repeat it under your breath. Here it is. Jesus, I'm sorry. I've run away from you. But I know you died for my mistakes. And I know that I'm always forgiven. Jesus, you love me so much. You have never given up on me and you never will. I'm coming back to you, God. Walk with me. Amen. Amen. Wonderful. I'm gonna pray for all of us and the band's gonna lead us into this time of prayer and remembering who Jesus is. Jesus, will you make your heart for us abundantly clear? God, I pray that not a single person in this room would leave without understanding the depth of your love for us. God, open the closed-minded minds, open the hard hearts. But Jesus, I pray that your love on the cross and your love for us every day would be the most evident thing right now. We ask this in your name, Jesus Christ. Amen.